All right, guys, welcome to Into the Apocalypse, number 18. I'm Adam. I'm here with my co-host, the infamous Chud X.
What up?
The sausage king of Whatcom County, Washington.
That is me.
So, yeah, how's it going, bro?
Oh, it's going really good. I'm in a very positive place right now.
That's
the weather changing.
Yeah, well, that'll do it. What else brought it on?
I think what I don't want to talk about, I'll just briefly mention with this whole Ukraine thing. Like, it's really making me tune things out the way I feel like I should have at the beginning of COVID, but yeah. I failed to do.
Yeah.
And it's, I'm just like, I see it everywhere, just like I did COVID at the beginning, but instead of my blood pressure going up, I just go, no. I'm just turning away.
It's easier because you're not being forced to be pro Ukraine, but you were like being forced to wear a mask and shit, you know?
And also I didn't 2 years ago, we're coming up on the actual 2 year anniversary of 2 weeks to flatten the curve.
Yeah.
And I didn't know much about viruses or germs or germ theory or any of that shit. You know, I kind of knew a little here and there, but I wasn't the scholar that I am now from going through 2 years of it. So I had a lot to learn. I am 100%+ positive that I am anti-war, period.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
You know, like, it's like, it's not, this isn't a question to me. And I did have a lot of questions 2 years ago. So
yeah.
So it's a big difference there, and it's making it that, I don't know. And with that, I see, I hope, I think maybe it's temporary, but COVID seems to be disappearing.
It's totally gone.
Yeah. It's like, I mean, I'm still seeing masks.
I've got that written in the notes. Like, how fast did the narrative change?
Yeah. It happened overnight.
Yeah, I mean, it just shows you, like, I thought it would take it a little bit longer, but it mm-hmm. they can just, and like, I mean, nobody's talking about it. Nobody's heads are going to roll because we're all under this fucking, this thing now, you know?
I went to,
where's Fauci? What's he up to these days?
I just saw him. Actually, he's poking his head in.
Is he talking about Ukraine?
He is saying that this Ukraine stuff could cause an outbreak of TB, of tuberculosis.
Oh, cool. Are you serious?
I saw that. I don't know. Like I said, I'm turning a blind eye when I'm seeing the Ukraine shit. So when I saw Fauci, I was like, oh, interesting. What? You know, and that was all. That was the deepest I went on that. Was looking at a headline and moving along. Could have been Babylon B and I wasn't paying close attention. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, before we go too far, let's get some business out of the way.
Yeah.
As we're value for value, it's like we say every show, time, talent, treasure. Send us any of those three and we'll love you forever. Send us emails. Guys, there haven't been very many emails lately, but you can get us at DeborahGetsRedPilled@protonmail.com. New merch is up in the Teespring store. The links are in the show notes. If you join the Telegram group, I'll do it after I drop this show too. I'll give you the code for 15% off the whole site. We've got the Meriwether Lewis didn't kill himself shirts, and we also have the End of the Apocalypse Spacemen shirts, drawn by the infamous bags of OBDM fame. And a lot of the other shows on the No Agenda stream. And I never mentioned this, guys. We're on Alt Media United. So if you check out that that site, you can get the podcast. I think you get the RSS feed through there. So you don't have to go through Apple or I don't know how it works. But check us out there. And there's a whole bunch of other like-minded shows of our friends and future friends that you should check out. And I want to throw out a shout out to my friend Chef Matt Pierce from New Hampshire. And he's got a side hustle going. He's making spices, spice blends for cooking.
Oh.
So his company is called Granite State Spice Blends. And just add .com to the end of that. And that's his website. So go over there and order some stuff. Tell him I sent you. And he's a good dude. And he's a, I know him from, he had a podcast for a minute that I went on, and I know him through Monica Perez and Prop Report stuff. So yeah, check him out. I just saw him on online today, and he's pushing that stuff super hard and working really hard on it. And I asked him if he wanted to shout out, and he said, yeah. So there you go, Matt. Yeah, I think that's all.
I'd like to throw a shout out here too for, gosh, I'm so bad with names. The seed guy.
Oh, Joe from daddygarden.org.
Yeah.
I'll give, I'll put his, I'll give him one more. I'll put his stuff in the show notes for today too.
Well, he sent us a nice little package, and it was so amazing. With the note saying with love from our garden to yours. And I mean, he just loaded us up with a ton of seeds of huge variety of things. Some stuff I don't think we're going to have much luck growing up here.
Got a bunch of melons.
Yeah, a ton of melons.
Yeah,
I'll give some a shot. Like, I don't want to use all those because I'd rather send them to someone who's going to have better luck.
But, yeah,
you know, might be kind of a fun, you know, may have some kind of greenhouse. Try and set
we
them
can
up
do
in there.
We can get watermelons up here, can't we?
We tried a lot when I was a kid.
Yeah,
and we would get these things that weren't as big as a cantaloupe, and they were okay.
Yeah,
you know, you could tell
watermelon has a lot of rind, so probably not much in there.
So it was like you'd get a few good bites, but
yeah,
you know, if nothing else, I'm sure they'd make good compost and good chicken feed and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, I'm very, very excited. I appreciate that so much, Joe, if you're listening.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks, Joe. Anybody, if you've got stuff that you like selling, send us a sample and we'll give you a shout out for it. We'll give you a couple shows worth of advertisement. If I could find somebody on here that does coffee, I would be eternally grateful. And trade you advertisement for coffee for the rest of the time of this show. But yeah, I think that takes care of business. So yeah, we're gonna have a fun one today. I talked to you. I listened to on audiobook. It took me 2 days. It was an 8-hour audiobook, Moon Man, the new book by Bart Sabrell.
Yeah.
And Bart Sabrell is famous for making the movie A Funny Thing Happened, and then it's on the Way to the Moon is the rest of the title, but I think it's just called A Funny Thing Happened, debunking the moon landing, which is quickly becoming my favorite along with Antarctica, because Antarctica is so broad conspiracy.
Yeah,
the moon landing seems like it's the easiest one to debunk, and it was relatively easy to get Deborah on board with that, which was surprising.
Yeah.
Because Bart Sabrell was a young boy when the moon landing happened, and he said he resisted it so much just because he's such an American patriot. But his book is really good.
He also crazy. Made Astronauts Gone Wild, right?
Yeah. Astronauts Gone Wild is the follow-up to that, and that's just where he confronts and does a bunch of guerrilla journalism, confronts like 16 of the original Apollo astronauts, goes to their houses. He had a production company called a film production company called ABC Productions or something like that. So a bunch of people thought he was from ABC. And he didn't do that on purpose. He said he did it so he would be at the start of the phone book.
Uh-huh.
It was back in those days. Yeah. So he infamously, what I found him from was he got punched in the face by Buzz Aldrin. It was a pretty good one too. I went back and watched it yesterday. You really cracked him good.
Oh yeah. I've seen that footage a good number of times.
And I mean, you got to remember those guys were all like crazy, like Air Force test pilots. So they weren't like pussies, you know, like,
right. Right.
I bet you Buzz Aldrin used to like fight like back in the World War II days, you know, so
for sure. For sure.
But yeah, it's funny. He gets like threatened. One he went to one guy's house and he was there with his son. The guy was there with his son. I forget which one it was. And the dude like left his lapel mic. He left his lapel mic on the guy. And the cameraman still had the tape running even after they left. And the guy starts talking to his son about like, should we call our friends at the CIA to take care of that guy? So yeah, it's pretty crazy. And he talks
about that. That says so much right there. That's the response.
And what he was doing, he was asking the guys to swear on the Bible that they went to the moon, and a few do it and most don't.
Right. Which you'd think, if you went to the moon, putting your hand on a Bible and saying it like just wouldn't be a big deal.
Yeah.
You know, like it's, I don't know. I guess the normie argument is, well, why would they need to even say it? You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, well, I don't know. You know,
to get that guy to shut up and leave you alone. Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe he won't come back.
Just that guy. There's a bunch of them. Like, just tell him off by doing this, you know, but yeah. So the book is great though. Huh? Yeah.
Like, I mean, I listened to it. I've just been home. I was like, listening to podcasts all day, and I went on Audible. Mm-hmm. I get credits on Audible. I don't usually use them because everything I look up is either not available on Audible or not. I can't use those credits with it. And I just looked it up. I heard him on William Ramsey Investigates, which is one of my favorite podcasts. And so I looked it up on Audible and I could use one of my free credits for it. So I listened to it. It's 8 hours. It took me 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's pretty good.
Any new revelations from listening to it? That
it's cool because he tells his story along the journey of what happened, you know, like throughout him investigating. He gets kidnapped and put in like a mental institute multiple times. And then he goes through like a ton of proofs. And he's like super patriotic, like probably maybe kind of a Q guy. I don't know. Based on just like how he talked, he might have been into that stuff, but he subscribes to the fact he's not dead, that there's two warring factions inside the deep state or the government, one good, one bad. And he said the good ones came to visit him in the mental institute, told him that they had his back, and that he thinks that's the reason why he hasn't been offed. But I reached out to him. I sent him an email to see if he'd come on. Because I think if he came on, I think Deborah could convincingly say, like, it's bullshit.
Yeah. Oh, that would be a really good one for Deb.
Yeah. So we've done it once before with Alex Stein. That was a fun episode. And, but then, like, yesterday, I got an email from this guy, John Hamer. I'm, like, on his group email thing. John Hamer is a great dude. He is an English guy. He came on our show a long time ago. Super nice. Like, no problems coming on. He's somewhat of a big name. He's written some incredibly long books, like 600-page books. I forget what they're called. But he came on and talked to us about the Titanic.
Right. Yeah, he's good on the Titanic. He's also really good on like charities, like Red Cross and stuff like that. I heard him spew out some facts that you know, I don't remember off the top of my head, but I repeated them a bunch at the time, like the number of the amount of blood that's collected by Red Cross versus the amount of blood that's ever used by them. It's like insane, and that's with blood, but then there's also like all these other charities that, you know, they're getting rich as shit. And he seemed to blow the lid off of like just about any major charity is a big fucking scam.
I think that's pretty well established now and like known by a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Except for I just got an email from his like group email list, and he's doing a bunch of stuff on the moon landing.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I'm sure he's great.
So if that guy, Bart Sobrell, doesn't get back to us, like you brought it up. He apparently hates flat earth.
Yeah.
And just if he like looked at our feed and maybe even like saw that we even like entertained that or gave someone a voice about it, maybe he wouldn't
He might shy away. That would be a shame. Cause it, because you and me, we're both pretty open-minded dudes that we'll talk to someone who doesn't believe that the earth is flat or whatever. It'd be nice to have that return to us.
Yeah. It's funny because a lot of the arguments he uses on like why the it's like the same arguments for why the lie in about flat earth, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's what always, I don't know. There's always a hang up there. Not always. I mean, some people are fully blown open for their mind. Like, but it's, I don't know. So many people, you hear them, they'll use the same arguments in all these different places about the deep state. But then one thing or another, they just can't cross that line with. And it's usually, I mean, flat earth is a big one. Sometimes it's a moon landing. It just kind of blows my mind sometimes.
Yeah. But yeah, so we'll try to do a moon landing episode coming up with Deborah. I'll reach out to him. And then I've reached out to a couple other people. We're going to reschedule. We got the Dog Man rescheduled for the 15th. Yeah.
Cool.
And I'm going to reach out to John Hamer. I'm talking to John Brisson today. He's a great guy from We've Read the Documents. He's going to come on soon. Yeah, it's cool because there's just a bunch of people are flaking too. A bunch of people are like trying to get locked down and just like won't give me dates and stuff. So
yeah.
Guys, tell us who you want to hear about. And Chud X, you can reach out to people too if you'd like.
Yeah, I've been trying. I've been having very, very cold luck on that right now. But
yeah. What would you like to do a show on?
Oh, I would love to talk to someone who can talk a lot about is nukes. And
yeah.
That's especially now. Right now is kind of like the time. I mean, that's part of why I have an easy time glossing over all these posts and all these articles about Ukraine is, I mean, there's like a big part that's hanging out in the back of my head that's going, dude, I don't even know these fucking nukes are real.
Oh, I don't, even if they were real, it's, can you believe there's 40-year-old men like me walking around in America that are scared that they might die in a nuclear war?
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
It's wild. You know, we've talked on here before about
even like me saying that they don't exist. That's right. Like, even if they did, like I have no fear.
Well, we've talked on here before about like all the whole duck and cover, you know, from before our time.
Yeah.
And like, that seems like you just look at it on the surface and it's like, damn, that could have all been a psyop. I mean, that's not even taking, like you said, not even taking into account the idea that nukes might not be what they are, what we are told they are.
Yeah.
Like it's just, and I feel like we could get back there right now. I don't know. You know, it's so disturbing after watching the last 2 years and how much the people around us will just march out the orders they're given. If we're told to fear this on a level like people were before us and kids in school start doing duck and cover, you know, prepare for the fucking bomb kind of shit, I don't know where we'll be.
Yeah. How long till they say that masks can help with nuclear fallout?
Yeah.
Cloth masks.
It sounds insane right now.
No, it doesn't.
But yeah, give it time. I mean, like I've been saying it since the beginning of COVID. Like, it sounds insane now, but wait till they tell you it's for environmental reasons that you need to wear a mask. And you know, it still hasn't happened. But they're gonna start telling us masks for other things. I'm so certain of that. They put way too much research into masks. And by research, I mean, you know, facial recognition through a mask type research to do away with this.
Yeah. Well, the big West Coast Democratic Progressive Coalition all agreed that for us, 11:59 p.m. March 11th, I think that's next Friday, the mask comes off for us, for all of us, for me, you, and California.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, I hadn't heard that last.
Yeah, they all colluded because we're all the same. You know, the West Coast's all the same.
So it's
from Bellingham, Washington to San Diego, California. You know, just the same.
all the way across. That's
yeah,
that's great. I don't
all
know.
All the way to the Idaho border. You hit the Idaho border, you're safer over there. You don't need you didn't need a mask the whole time, pretty much.
But I'm struggling with it all.
In Spokane, you're scared. It's dangerous. You're in Baker City, Oregon. You know, it's dangerous out there. But
as long as you're in the no constitution zone.
Yeah.
You know about that? You ever heard like Charlie Robinson talk about that?
Yeah, that 100 miles around the coasts and the border, yeah, right?
And the border. So like the entire, you know, the mainland of the United States.
Yeah, and that's like the main population centers of the country pretty much, right?
Yeah, right.
Because it's all the coast and then like the upper Midwest, mm-hmm, and the East Coast.
Yeah.
And so supposedly the word is if you're within 100 miles of either the Canadian border, the Mexican border, or each coastline, the Constitution doesn't apply.
Yep. Just doesn't, never has, I think is kind of where the history on that goes.
I've heard Charlie talk about that. I haven't heard anybody else talk about that. So I don't know if I can confirm or deny.
And then I researched it myself and I didn't get very far because there's just not a lot of information, but there is like official sources that seem to validate it. But then following that thread proved to be pretty hard.
So is the Chicago seem like a really stronghold for the Constitution, for a constitutional republic?
Oh, I guess so, huh? Yeah. I'm having such a hard time with all this masks being pulled back because every time I hear it, I'm like, great, whatever. Like, we'll see, you know, I don't know. It's just, it's not the celebration that it would have been a year and 11 months ago that it would have been. If we'd only done this for a month and then they said, get rid of it, I'd say, okay, thank God we're done. Yeah.
I'm going to go to town the day before.
Yeah.
And the day of, I'm going to do an experiment. I'm going to go see if people are wearing it the day before. I'm going to go to Walmart. I'll go to Walmart in Longview, Washington. And I'll maybe I'll go to two. I might go to St. Helens Walmart and I'll go to the Longview one. Two states. I'll hit them both.
Yeah.
I'll brave the smell of diarrhea and vomit mixed with Subway. And I'll check them out. And then I'll go the day that the mandate's been lifted. I bet you that most people don't even know
that it's been lifted.
Yeah, that it's going to be lifted. I think it doesn't even matter.
In fact, I just had an argument with someone today that because they were going to a restaurant to meet some family. And you know, I said, hey, maybe you won't have to wear a mask at least. Well, we have to until the 21st was the response. I was like, oh, well, because I, you know, I'm just saying you can try not doing it because it was someone who doesn't like him but has complied all the way across, you know.
Yeah.
But it really pissed him off to think that I would think that we could stop doing it today when we have to wait until the 21st, you know.
Yeah.
On the other hand, you know, you mentioned Walmart. I just went to Walmart a few days ago for the first time in a while, and I don't think I saw any masks.
Really?
I mean, I'm sure there were a few. I was with my son and we were engaged with each other. I wasn't people watching or paying too much attention to other people. I did notice like a couple employees with them just hanging from their ear.
Yeah.
But none of the employees that I spoke to directly had one on, and none of the customers that I noticed had one on. Just kind of seemed like, oh, it's over.
Yeah.
It's done. We forgot about that. That was so 3 weeks ago, dude.
It's so funny. Like, cause where I go, there's a Walmart in the same parking lot as the Home Depot, and the Home Depot's 75% no mask.
Yeah.
And Walmart's still
high.
Yeah. Cause there's so many obese people in there.
Yeah.
Just so many.
Isn't that interesting?
Dumb, you know, fat people. And then there's like, I don't know if Home Depot's a healthier clientele, but it's like people who are like actually doing something besides consuming fucking China. I mean, you're buying Chinese stuff at Home Depot too, but
sure,
you know, but you know, well, what I mean?
It is a phenomenon that I've noticed throughout this. And, you know, even the more recent masks that I've seen, like they tend to be on very obese people, you know, people in the Rascal or even a straight up wheelchair, who, you know, maybe missing a foot from diabetes or whatever, you know, like, and they're always wearing the mask. Maybe it's because I notice it, because every time I see that, every single time I see that, the thought goes through my head of, there's the picture of health.
Yeah.
Because that's what we're being told. That guy's healthy. I'm the unhealthy.
That guy cares about his health and your health.
Yeah. That guy cares not just about his health.
He's wearing his mask for you.
Yeah. For me. I should feel special when I see it.
Yeah. Our guest is here. Let's pause. It's going to be a fun one. All right, guys. We're back and we are here with our guests. We've got two today. Returning champion Casey Watson, the lunatic dolphin of Golden Gate Starfort Command, and his esteemed colleague Nick. What's going on, guys?
Hey,
yeah. Yeah.
What's happening?
Glad to have you guys here. We're going to get into some, we're going to do some call out culture of our own. I think today we're going to get into talking about just the state of punk rock, how it's turned from, you know, being a rebellious teenage subculture to a mainstream compliant disappointment. Would you agree?
Definitely. Or I would throw in monetized as well.
Got it. Yeah, that's a big one. So what have, Casey, you know better than most of us, because I think you're involved in the punk rock scene pretty directly. You play in bands, you go on tour with some of the bigger name touring bands, and yeah, you kind of make your living from it. So how do you want to get into talking about this? Should we just talk about what, how old were you when you first started getting into punk rock, Casey?
It was definitely like the early teen years.
Yeah.
And,
what was this? Late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah. Early 90s.
Okay.
Am I echoing again?
Yeah.
And
man, what's happening here?
Now you're better there.
Better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Better.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, what is going on with that? Sorry, this echo is just killing me over here.
It's not so bad now.
Maybe if I turn that down. All right. How's that?
Sounding good. You're good.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. All right, yeah, so I got in, like, really started getting into punk, like, probably, like, 15, 16. And it wasn't really until, like, I heard Cro-Mags and Agnostic Front, and, like, I think when I read the lyrics to Age of Quarrel, I was like, man, like, I mean, I almost felt like I could have wrote those lyrics, like, not that I could have wrote those lyrics, but I felt like it like came from me, you know. It's like, wow, like I actually, it's the first like piece of music I honestly could relate to, and from then on I was just done
yeah,
and for life.
Yeah, it's a great album. Got what do we got on it? We got Hard Times, probably the most famous song off of it. We got Malfunction. What else?
Street Justice.
Yeah, Street Justice.
Show You No Mercy.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an awesome album. I love the original Cro-Mags. Yeah, one of the original members puts up Facebook or Instagram posts now talking about wearing three masks, but you know, that's a whole other story.
I mean, that just goes to show you what kind of guy that guy is.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so and you were in Santa Cruz, California, correct?
Yeah.
What was the scene like there?
It was mainly punk, like skate punk, surf punk,
like thrash.
And you know, hardcore, but there wasn't a big hardcore scene. It was just a big punk scene.
Yeah.
And, you know, so basically it, I ended up going up to the Bay Area. Like, I mean, at one point I was probably going up there like 3-4 times a week, whether for band practice or for shows.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's a cool small scene in Santa Cruz and it's pretty gnarly. So, you know, it was a good place to, like, you know, figure it out.
Yeah. Did it have any like crossover with surfing?
Yeah. I mean, there's tons of surf punks, skate punks.
Yeah.
Yeah. All that.
Right on.
You'd see there'd be every show, there'd be winos and vans flying across all over the place, yeah. And people losing them in the pit, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like you'd see some dudes outside with like one wino on and their socks pulled up to their knees and like one sock just kind of quitting, you know? And like,
I don't want to brag about anything. I'm not the toughest guy in the world, but I had a pair of slip-on winos one time. If anybody doesn't know, winos are like these real cheap canvas like slip-ons. They made lace-up ones, but they made slip-ons too. They're big in California, like cholos wore them. And I went to a Swing and Utters show and I got into a fight. I beat this guy up pretty good and I had to like run out. It was at the Justice League and I had to run out and I lost a wino in the pit on my way out, man. But
they're not good pit shoes.
Yeah. Nick, how about you, man? Where are you from?
I am also from Santa Cruz.
Yeah, did you guys grow up together?
Casey's a bit older than me, but yeah, we grew up skateboarding. I met him through music and going to shows, went to all of his old band's shows and stuff. He just kind of carted me around.
Yeah, and that was your old band was Never Healed, correct?
I don't know if he wants to say it's pre-Never Healed.
Yeah, it goes back to like the Yafit Koto days.
Okay. I didn't know that band. What were some of the bigger name bands coming out of Santa Cruz when you guys were around?
Oh, Fury 66.
Yeah.
Good Riddance.
Yeah.
It's mostly like that surf skate punk kind of poppy stuff going on.
Yeah, yeah.
Initially meeting Casey. You know, he was wearing a old Power Violence band shirt, Monster X. And
I remember them.
Yeah, great straight edge Power Violence, grindcore stuff. I think shared members of Drop Dead.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, in Santa Cruz, you didn't really see a whole lot of that kind of stuff. Yeah, it was few and far between. And so seeing somebody with that band shirt was kind of like, holy shit. Like, that's a rad shirt, dude. I think I was like 13 or something.
Yeah. And it was pre being able to buy it on the internet days. So
no, yeah,
seen the like band or known somebody that saw the band or sent a money order to like New Jersey to get stuff.
Yeah. Or like Havoc Records or something. It was pretty funny.
Yeah.
When you had to wait 3 months to get something in the mail.
Yeah. And you didn't know if it was coming.
No fucking tracking.
Fingers crossed that you're going to get your 3 7-inches and a t-shirt.
I bought 7 inches off eBay with pre PayPal with money orders.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I remember when PayPal first came about, it was kind of like, whoa, what's this?
Yeah.
I don't know about leaving my bank info on the computer.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And mail order was like a huge component to my being into punk rock, because I lived out in buttfuck nowhere, where every punk band that was around here, I was either in or they were my friends, and you know, none of them really went any place. But like, we were all pretty into some shit, but everything had to be mail order. And later, I found trading tapes through that too, which really expanded my horizon and being able to get into just all kinds of shit that never ever ever would have come played up in my little town. But yeah, there was an honor system kind of thing going on, of that, like, you send shit off all the time. I'd send money out And I'd also send tapes and records out to people all the time. And just kind of, I just have to forget about it. It'd go out. And then hopefully, like you said, 3 months later, all of a sudden, like, oh, bam, here's this. Like, I've been waiting for that. That's totally awesome.
Yeah.
It was a delayed gratification that, like, I don't know. I felt like people around me at that time weren't willing to sacrifice that delayed gratification, because if they couldn't get it at the store, they couldn't get it at a Sam Goody or something in the mall, or even the independent record store, then like they were like, it didn't exist to them. So I lived in this world where it was like, I don't know, I got packages in the mail all the time. And, you know, I never knew what I would be listening to each day until I got the mail, you know? And now that's been removed another level of with internet downloading. It's like delayed gratification doesn't exist. You hear about a band, you're not sure if they sound interesting or not. By 4 hours later, you have their entire discography to listen to on your player, and you have Wikipedia and other sources on the internet to just read their whole history, and you know a band entirely inside and out within a day. You know, it would take months and years to even a mainstream band, it could be hard to
yeah. And you hear all sorts, you get all sorts of rumors that were never true, but everybody knew, mm-hmm. and all sorts of shit like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I used to read through all the reviews and just write down bands and the records and, you know, figure out what record label and, you know, send off for catalogs or whatever. It was like always doing research, basically. Yeah, you know, yeah. Maximum Rock and Roll.
I was gonna say that. Maximum Rock and Roll was a crucial component.
What
to
was that?
To punk
what was that then. One big catalog that came out in the '90s? They had like Vans and skateboards in it, but then they had like all the Fat Records stuff and
was that Sessions?
Yeah, Sessions. Yeah, that was it. Yeah. So Sessions. I used to get those. Yeah, and you still had. I had to get a check from my mom to order stuff from that. So.
Yeah. I don't even really remember if I must have sent money orders or something.
Yeah.
So long ago. I can't even remember.
Yeah. You know how hard it was to get a Lonsdale sweatshirt in St. Helena, California in 1996. It was tough, man. What was the scene like up in Northwest Washington where you were at, Paul? Chud.
Well, it's like I just said, you know, I mean, way up here, not Seattle, but another 100 miles north, you know, it was up to us. And there wasn't much of one. I was more of a metalhead in my early teens. And it wasn't until I ran away from home and, you know, hopped a few trains and went to some big cities and started hanging out with some real shit bags that I found really hardcore punk, which as soon as I heard it, like, it was like, oh, this is the soundtrack to my life. You know, this is what should be playing all the time for me. And when I found myself back up here, it was like, that was when I got all my friends into some new bands and stuff. And we just started playing and we just made our own scene. We just said, you know, this doesn't exist, but hey, we got friends with basements. Let's just start playing shows. And they were free at one point, but eventually, you know, we started charging a couple bucks here and there, and you know, it kind of evolved into what exists around here now, which is the same as I'm sure it is any place else, a bunch of fucking bars that all need vaccine passports even though they're not required. And it is a sad fucking state what all of that shit turned into.
Yeah,
big time.
There's no effort to it anymore. And what you just described was like creating an entire scene, which took effort and, you know, DIY.
Yeah.
Totally. I was just going to say that was like one of the best things about punk is that we learned that we could just do our own scene. You know, it's like, oh, these people don't want to book us or that, whatever. Well, we're going to do our own shows, you know, and do our own shit. And that's like one of the sickest thing about all this. That's a major life lesson for me. You know, I still live by that day to day. And yeah, it's fucking sucks how it's totally crumbled into this fucking just shit.
Well, you know, I think I saw it starting to crumble a long time ago. You know, it was like 2005 as I was starting to feel a little less like a liberal hippie within being a punk. And prior to that, you know, me and all my friends, we called ourselves anarchists. But we, you know, I don't think any of us really knew what that meant, you know, not in an intellectual sense at all. But as I kind of went through this transformation, I started really learning what anarchism was. A lot of my friends seemed to be like, well, but you still want to be on welfare. Like, part of being a punk is just not working and getting free money. And we got a government that's willing to dole that out to you. Why aren't you taking advantage of that? And I'd just be like, no, those are the bad guys, right? Like, we all agreed on this years ago that those are the bad guys. We don't want that. And most of the people I was hanging out with just looked at me with blank stare and went, yeah, but it's free money. You know, I also made movies and stuff back then, and I'd show movies to people that I'd make, and they'd be like, this is good. You could do better if you had more money. Why don't you start applying for grants from the government so that they'll pay for your movies? And it was like, no, I don't want their filthy money. You know, I was starting to come around to their stolen money, you know, all this other kind of shit. And I ended up separating ways with a lot of the punks I knew at that time, because they were so ready to beg from the system, and I wasn't willing to budge in that direction. And that's why, you know, fast forward from 2005-ish to 2020, and I was just like, well, of course they're fucking canceling their shows and wearing masks, and when they do have shows, requiring vaccine passports. You know, like, those people were already lost to me.
That's interesting. I like that a lot. I mean, it's been weird to see big time, like, it's a thriving scene in the Bay Area, and then COVID hit and the amount of people who just drop off altogether. And it made me kind of wonder, in that essence of like, what was the conviction there to begin with, you know? And I think that I probably gets into exactly what we're talking about today, or focusing on, I guess, of just like the state of things in punk or alternative metal, goth, what have you, scenes. And like, I really like how you preface that with, or what you were saying with how you started out, you know, like doing your own grassroots DIY thing, and it evolved into not about the money, but into something for a community, you know, a community that you built yourself during the shutdown. My band, my partner and I in the band, did exactly that. We said, fuck this shit. We're doing shows still. We're not going to let this shut us down. If everybody else wants to be shut down, that's on them. But this is what keeps us sane, is playing music. And whether it's for one person or 20, it doesn't matter. You know, so we went about it that with that mindset, and did free shows up and down the West Coast with generators underneath bridges, in backyards, and tried to use social media as little as possible in this endeavor, just through word of mouth, through community. And I mean, it's not like we had these epic blowout shows by any means, but the people that were there were genuinely there for the love of their community and their scene and the music and what they get from all of those things. And it was honestly like a beautiful thing, man. Like, I couldn't have asked for more, you know? And so hearing that from you, it makes me feel real good. Seem like a down to earth fella.
Hey Nick, did you guys catch any blowback for doing that?
I don't know. I mean, we didn't really pay attention. Honestly, it's like, kind of in the mindset, it's not like my business what people think about me. You know, that's their opinion.
Yeah. Right on. I guess if we can go back in time to before the problem with the air from, you know, 2 years ago. We're almost at 2 years right now. ChudX just reminded me. And
it's so crazy to think about.
Yeah. When did you guys start to see kind of a shift in punk rock to being kind of like this over politicized corporate, you know, Mountain Dew, giant festivals in Las Vegas, like type scene? I guess those are two different things, but kind of go together.
To be honest with you, from, I don't even know, I couldn't tell you the years exactly, probably like 2019 back to like 2013 or so, I just stopped paying attention to music altogether. Like, just, I jumped in a trade and focused on my apprenticeship and working. So Casey could probably be better to answer that one.
I feel like it kind of started around the Obama time. I feel like that's when I first started noticing like my friends start really caring about the politics and the system and stuff. And I don't know, I think that just steamrolled, you know, and it got them engaged. And then, you know, the madness hit once again.
Yeah, I started noticing it before that. And it might have been because where I was, you know, living geographically, I was in a college town way up in Northern California. And, you know, it was a party town. It was awesome.
Was it Chico?
Yeah. Well, I was there from 1998 to 2002. And for some reason, while I was there, bands stopped going to Sacramento and started hitting Chico. It was rad. I saw like all the big name bands there. I saw like the Business there. I saw Dropkick Murphys. I saw like, and I was, it was Oi bands were coming through. It was crazy. You know, I was in heaven, you know, and it was walking distance from my house. At these all ages clubs. And then later on, it was at these like real shitty dive bars. And it was great. But I was at that time, that was the time of George Bush too. And I started seeing a lot of people, rightly so, speaking out against him. But I saw him engaging in like party politics, punk rockers, like kind of, it seemed as though they'd been co-opted. I remember NoFX, who I'm not a fan of at all, doing this. And man, just seeing pictures of that singer guy is really gross. But yeah, I remember like they all had like the George Bush shirts that said "Not my president." I remember seeing the Circle Jerks once, and Keith Morris was on stage telling everybody that they needed to go get registered to vote to knock George Bush out of office. And that's when I really noticed it. And it was, they're getting people engaged, and it was crazy. Like, how do you think that the mindset of these like older punk rockers changed from probably hating all politicians at some point to being triggered so much by just like these kind of boring right wing, you know, war hawk type guys?
I wonder though, if in a way it's just a clever ploy to sell records, you know, like,
yeah,
you're identifying with the normie through lyrics and imagery.
Yeah.
Well, I do think that Obama could have had something to do with all of it. I mean, I could probably pinpoint the time when I would have stopped referring to myself as being a punk or being a part of the punk scene as like 2009, just after Obama went in. And that had less to do with music, which I did still go to shows and stuff, you know, I didn't completely remove myself, but and not long after Obama came in, and I would still hang out with my friends that I kept up to that point. just the same ones that were looking at me like I was crazy when I was saying that I didn't want to take any tax money. Now I was saying that Obama was a war hawk, and they were literally going, well, you know, that's racist, right? You know, and I'm going, I don't think so, but I don't care. You know, if that makes me racist, then I'm a racist. Well, so you admit you're a racist, you know, and like it got to where, like, I still went to shows, but I would tend to like drive down to Seattle to go see a show where I just blend in with the crowd, as opposed to going and seeing all of my friends, because I couldn't carry on conversations with them. And all the other people there, I'd look around and I'd just be like, it's all posers. These are all fucking posers in here. And if I try to get real with anyone, they're like shutting the conversation down. And, you know, I mean, if that transfers into what happened with the music, it would make a lot of sense to me, because, you know, yeah, these people were in line with parties, and I just wasn't playing that game. I was right there with them against Bush, fuck Bush. But as soon as I continued to say, fuck the president, they were like, oh, well, wait, you know, he's black, right? I mean, that was the whole thing that really fucking pissed me off over and over again, was being called racist over that shit. Cause I never said shit that was racist. I have said shit that was racist, but not at that time, not about the president, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of these people grew up and got married and had kids and just probably not even realizing got sold into the system and brainwashed into it. And, you know, they were just bought in, all of a sudden they had to care about what politics was going on. And, you know, they just got brainwashed into the game.
When you put it that way, do you think it's maybe similar to what happened with the hippies in the 70s into the 80s?
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%.
Yeah. Because all those guys turned into the yuppies.
My parents were hippies in the 60s, early 70s. And they went into the corporate world and, you know, two kids and a career and retirement. The whole nine.
Yeah. That's crazy to think of it that way. And then you can also think that like everybody, it's so weird because there's like, just like old people that are still trying to hang on to it. And then, but if you go to these like larger urban centers, like where you guys live, it's a tough place to be outspoken if you're anything but the status quo, you know? So I think there's a lot of pressure like that. And I think a lot of people just show their true colors of what they've been the whole time. It's just like weak, you know, hive mind people who are, you know, maybe like the way that punk rock sounded, or just found their way into it. And it was something that they could cling on to, you know, that as an identity. But
I honestly think it is the identity factor, but not just like, yeah, somebody concretely saying I'm a punk. It's like these things are so accessible these days.
Yeah, it takes no effort.
Yeah, you are online. One day you're into Sanrio, and the next day you're charged and spiked and ready for battle to go to, I don't even know, Holidays in the Sun or something. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah, you're not going to get stuffed in a garbage can when you go to school the next day, you know.
I watched a fair amount of people during the shutdown transition like that, like online, like, oh, I'm, you know, I'm a skinhead now, or I'm a apolitical punk or something, you know, when they were designated something else beforehand.
Yeah.
And it, like, the accessibility of these lifestyles coupled with the instant gratification of social media and the internet, I think, has pushed that along. You know, a lot of people aren't using the word poser anymore. And like, far be it for me to change anybody else's mind. I stopped using the word because it does alienate people, but it is real as fuck. Like, I think we live in a complete inclusion culture now. And so eliminating the word poser or wannabe or things like that makes people feel better about themselves in general. And so, yeah, kind of like stuck in this go-between where you can't tell a rich kid to fucking beat it anymore.
Yeah.
You know? Like, yeah. You're, well, yeah, it's bizarre.
Yeah. Well, used to, like, if you saw people with colored hair or with tattoos, you know, chances were you had something in common with them or you could relate to with them, you know? Yeah, but nowadays, like every, you know, you see everyone with colored hair and tattoos and, you know, like, oh, you're into hardcore punk. And they're like, fuck no, that shit sucks. I'm like,
yeah,
you look like you went, you look like you go to hardcore shows.
Yeah. If I had to base those metrics on people that I liked and I went to Portland, like there's everybody,
the biggest punk scene in the world.
Yeah. Everybody's got blue hair and a black hoodie with patches on it, but you know, they're like patches that say their pronouns and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And
they've never listened to Rudimentary Peni.
Yeah. Sure. They're not big Crass fans, you know? So, so being out on the road, Casey, have you noticed, is there still like young, are there still 16-year-old kids going to shows?
Yeah, there's definitely kids going to shows.
Yeah,
dude, the New Year's Eve show.
Yeah, I think there's a huge influx of a new generation coming up right now.
What are they like?
I don't quite know yet, because you know, there's hardly been a scene for the last 2 years, you know?
Yeah.
I'm just kind of like figuring it out. There's a lot of good bands in the Bay Area, like young hardcore bands, Tsunami and Scowl. Can you think of any other young ones, Nick?
Earth Exit.
Yeah. These guys are all doing their own shows. They got their own scene. They're crushing right now, like some of the biggest bands in the Bay.
Cool. How old are they?
Got to be early 20s.
Yeah.
20s to, you know, late 20s, early 20s, late 20s.
Who are they? Are they inspired by bands that were one generation ahead of them, or like by old 80s stuff?
It's all over the place.
Yeah, it's pretty all over. They've been doing pretty rogue shows. So like the mask and the Vax thing, they haven't been asking for anything like that at those shows. So
yeah,
I think these kids seem like they're fucking got their heads on straight.
Yeah,
that's really, really good to hear. That
just about everywhere else is
I have a fucking a bizarre story for you guys. So last week, Negative Approach played twice in the Bay Area.
Nice.
One show was at a bar. They checked vaxxed at the door, but no mask necessary. After
which bar?
Ivy Room
in Albany.
Yes, sir.
Got it.
Next night, Negative Approach opens up for Adolescents and Circle Jerks. I think at the Fillmore. I believe it was there. I didn't go. The drummer in my band went, and he said he got in line and waited, got to the ticket booth. He was on the list. They're like, oh, where's your booster? And he's like, I don't have a booster. And they're like, okay, get in that line, and then you can come pick up your ticket.
Wow.
So he gets in an even longer line, and he's waiting there, and he's ear hustling. He overhears somebody go, so we got to pay $45 to get our booster shot in this line.
Oh shit.
What?
All right. Now here's the fucking kicker. My other buddy went and saw Gary Numan the night before at the same venue, and no booster necessary.
Huh.
I have a theory that Keith fucking Morris works there it for is, the Keith CIA. Morris. Dude,
Keith Morris, man. I called him out.
Fucking pushing this fucking agenda, man. Like I heard another story. My band was in Ventura a couple weeks ago, And this cat was telling us that the singer for Dead Kennedys was on stage, like berating people, not Jello. Or, I don't know who the fuck it was, but berating people in the show on stage for not being vaxxed. And it's like, yo, man, how the fuck do you think people got in here? You know, like what agenda are you fucking on? And seeing this and hearing about it within the punk scene, it's just fucking sickening, man. It's That's so sickening. Bizarre.
And he's just jerking. They're just jerking each other off. If everybody in there has to have a fucking vax to be in there to be yelling, you know, they're yelling at no one that can hear them. You know, that's crazy.
I've been waiting for Jello to put out a Get the Jab song.
Yeah.
You guys have seen the video, right?
The punk version of Back That Vax Up.
Have you guys seen the video of him getting the vax?
No.
Yeah. It's on YouTube. Yeah, he put it on YouTube. It's him. He's got a mask on that says WWJD, what would Jello do? And he's got his arm up and he's looking at the camera and he says, "This one's for you, Robert F. Kennedy. Go fuck yourself," something like that. And it's just like, this is what world am I living in? That Jello, I don't know, you know.
Exactly.
A mutual friend of ours, Casey, Rotten John, was working at Slim's a long time ago, and I don't know who was playing, but he said Jello Biafra came in, was in line, and he was checking IDs, and he knew who he was, but he, you know, didn't. The guy's a fucking asshole. Everybody in the Bay Area punk scene knows it. And he comes up and he's like, "Oh, I need your ID for you to get in." And he says like, I'm from the Dead Kennedys. And he goes, "Dude, I don't care if you know Ted Kennedy. I'm not letting you in without an ID."
Sick.
Dude. Yeah, that's awesome.
Keith Morris is a spook. That's awesome, man.
Yeah, he's a kook too. Fuck all of the above.
Yeah, I mean, all that stuff is band by band for sure. So,
yeah.
I mean, I'm sure the clubs have some kind of thing, but I mean, if they're not even checking at the one show or whatever.
Like, so, how much was he pocketing off of each vaccine at the door, you know?
So people were actually doing it. People were actually getting vaccinated.
Yeah, my fucking buddy just walked. He's like, "Fuck this shit."
Yeah, that's insane.
That's insane. They're getting boosters at shows.
Dude, tickets to get into that show were like $45. So then put another $40 on that. You're like,
because $85. It's free at Walgreens, right?
Yeah.
Who knows?
So who's on the take for that?
I have no idea.
CBS.
And who's the technician that's injecting these people? Exactly. Are, you know, like, I don't know.
It's it's the needle exchange people.
It's just some dude getting minimum wage.
It's the guy. He just finished his shift as a greeter at Walmart. Now he comes to the venue to give people boosters. So he guy, see a punk
he's
show.
Got the rubber stamp in one hand and a needle in the other, man.
Yeah, Mastodon shirt, giving jabs.
Yeah. Are there anybody who did you guys see that were people that actually like spoke out, bigger names that people might know that spoke out and were good through this whole thing?
No, I don't know. That's a good question. I can't think of anybody offhand. I mean, I still feel like it's a sensitive subject. Yeah.
What about that big show in the park in New York?
Casey.
Yeah. I know. Well, John Joseph has been speaking out about it this whole time.
Yeah, he's been.
He's probably like the only one really that I can think of. Most people are have been scared and you know.
Scared to get canceled.
Yeah, I think that, or they're just scared that, or they just don't even, they actually believe they believe the narrative or whatever.
They're scared of the air.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think a part of it is people are just trying to comply so that they can, you know, whatever, because some of the shows that we did, like they were said they had to be masks or whatever, but no one was wearing a mask or whatever. And like, they weren't really enforcing it. So I think there is a part of it where like people are playing the game and trying to get over and just saying, okay, look, fucking, you know, wear the mask and have your thing. But
I think it's,
I don't want to give everyone too much credit though. You know, that's like a lot of people are bought into it for sure.
I think it's pretty acceptable to say, like, if I was having a show in my basement and just put on the flyer, I was going to say no masks, because that's what I would want to put. But if I felt that I needed to, masks required, put on there. And that meant as much as every flyer I ever made that said no booze. You know, like, it just didn't mean anything. It was just kind of a thing so that whoever was noticing these flyers that we'd put up in different places around town would be like, you know, oh, this has a bunch of fucked up satanic imagery on it. But they'd see, oh, but there's no booze, so at least they're not going to be getting hammered, you know, whatever these kids are doing.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like, I could see putting that mask thing on there just as like a, you know, we're normal. We're regular formality. People.
Yeah. But I mean, I think to never we are going to have to do that, you know, for a little bit, I think if we're playing at some of these places, you know, but like, I played down in LA at this pool hall and they weren't asking for anything and everything was all copacetic or whatever.
I've encountered all number of things like playing and booking shows during and post shutdown. So it's kind of like, it's hard to say. I've made some flyers that are like, I just put mask, not mask required, must wear mask. It just said mask because that's what the venue asked me to do. Like, oh, make sure people bring a mask. I'm like, I'm not telling anybody how to live their fucking life. You do what you want to do, but I'll follow your protocol, I suppose. I just played a string of shows down in LA and like Ventura, the mask mandate had lifted. There was no checking. No checking backs at the door. Nobody was wearing a mask at the show. The next night we played in LA and bass player in my band is not vaxxed. So we got to the bar and they were up our asses instantly. Just like, where's your cards? As soon as you set down your instruments, we need to see them. And I sent that guy to the fucking bathroom for about 30 minutes so we could play the fucking show. And then the next night was in Long Beach and there was no checking at the door, no masks, but it was a punk bar. So who knows?
That Alex's?
What?
Is that the name of the bar? That big?
Oh, it was called Supply and Demand.
Okay. What do you see going forward? Do you think that it's just going to be like these big major cities that are asking for stuff like that? Or do you think it's going to fade away?
I mean, during this as well, I went to the Midwest and played a few shows in like Cleveland and Pittsburgh. And it's wide fucking open, man. They do not give a flying fuck out there. And it's beautiful. It is fucking refreshing. People are living their lives, you know, and not like controlled by anything or any kind of fear, you know, like the scene is thriving and people are fucking having a good time.
Yeah. It's going to be crazy when all these like right-leaning red states become the hub of culture now, because they're the only place that musicians will go, comedians will go, you know, like artists can go and stuff like that. It's crazy, man.
My band right now is like trying to do a Texas only tour, like five days in Texas, just to fucking have fun, go buy ammunition and fuck off.
Yeah. It's like for the people like comedians that I hear talking, just go to Arizona and Florida now. That's like the only thing they do, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah. I think there's going to be a big push in like bringing the DIY stuff back. I think a lot of bands who have kind of been doing the label thing and the big clubs and big shows thing I feel like that world, I don't quite see that strictness going away so quickly. And so, but I think in a lot of smaller clubs and stuff, things can get away with more. So I think we just need to get back in the mindset of doing our own shows again and, you know, helping each other out, you know,
yeah,
stuff like that, you know, just bringing it back to the roots, you know, I mean, like what Nick was doing all year, you know, all the last 2 years.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You know, just, I think we need to bring it back a little bit, you know.
Take the power back.
Yeah, big time.
And like we were talking about towards the beginning too, you know, it's a beauty of, I mean, it's part of the nature of punk rock to me and other types of just basic roots music is that it's all DIY if you choose to, you know. There is no requirement to get booked someplace. The requirement is find a place to play. And if people take that attitude on more and more, I mean, that it's actually going to be good for the scene in the long run, in my humble opinion.
Big time. I mean, we need more venues, you know, we need more people putting on shows. We need more good bands, you know, good and more good people for sure.
I think that does though in that world, like maybe it's the haves and the have nots kind of aspect, but like somewhere down the line, someone's trying to monetize that process and make a living off of it. And that's where it kind of is like, it gets convoluted, you know, like I've tripped the fuck out coming back into music and seeing younger generation or even my generation or older generation so focused on quote unquote making it. And it's like, yeah, of course, every creative person would love to make music off of their craft and their creativity. But on the same hand, is that why we're in a punk scene or why we're involved in a punk scene? You know, like I heavily questioned that and made a lot of personal decisions on how I wanted to, you know, continue playing music and continue being involved based upon that, of like, that's not the community I'm looking for. You know, I'm not looking for a bunch of me first motherfuckers. What's in it for me? I'm looking for people who want to build something, you know, that can be bigger than ourselves collectively. And maybe doing, as Casey's saying, trying to everybody being a little bit more DIY and a little bit more independent and not thinking so much about the fucking making money in the system versus like making good times with your friends or for your friends, you know, and building those friendships and communities together.
Totally. I mean, one of the biggest things with me with punk was that it's so much more than just the music. It, you know, it's a lifestyle. It's a way of life. And that's how I base my life off it, is just being punk, being anti-system. You know, I try and be a part of the system as much as possible, you know, and surround myself with killer people with the same mindset, you know, and that's how we win, I think, you know. And it goes more than just punk, you know, it's just like the stuff we've been getting into, looking into his story and all this shit. It all ties in together, you know?
Yeah.
Like that's why I feel like looking into history, it's such a natural thing, because I've always questioned, you know, and I've always thought the government was bullshit, and I've thought a lot of their history was lies, and I've just grasped in the last couple of years that it's all lies, you know what I mean? And I don't know where I was going with that, but just punk is a lot more than just the music and whatever. Like my best friends in this world, you know, my girlfriend, people I call brothers, like I've all met through the hardcore scene and the punk scene. And, you know, I go to war with any of them any day, you know, and that's bigger than what most people got, I think.
Yeah, it's like Chud X and I are living out in the woods, but we're leading a DIY lifestyle. You know, we're doing it ourselves because we don't want to rely on anybody else. And I think that's, I don't know, I mean,
you're winning, dude. You guys are winning.
The fact that nobody has liked me because of the way that I've looked since I was 15 years old made this whole not being able to do certain stuff because I'm not willing to comply. It makes it real. It's not like a big deal to me, you know. It's like,
yeah, yeah. You and I step into that easily, which is why, you know, it's interesting that so many punks are complying, you know. Like, is it because they weren't as true as maybe we thought they were, you know, that they were less marching to the beat of their own drum or whatever dumb phrase you want to put in there, and more just like, oh, that's my scene. I like that hairstyle. I'm going to do that, you know, or whatever. You bring up the his story and all of that. And as I'm hearing this conversation unfold, it made me think, I wonder if there's any chance that this whole fucking lockdown COVID shit that we went through for 2 years, could that start a great reset of the punk rock scene to some degree, where, you know, you're talking about making it back into more of a DIY thing like it used to be? Like, yeah, sure, let the, you know, whatever, these shithole fucking punk venues that became vaccine booster centers or whatever, you know, they're a different scene now. Now the real punk scene are the ones that are people who are bringing fucking generators to bridges and having real fucking shows, because that's the real shit. That's what I've always thought and saw and seen and been a part of, is like I don't care. I don't really want to go down to Seattle and go see a major band in a major place. I want to see the dirty shit where there's a generator and we're out in the middle of nowhere and people, and there's cars to shoot at, you know, like old rundown cars that people are shooting at while Dayglo Abortions is playing over there, you know.
And the best part about that is that kind of environment attracts the type of person that I think I would want to be friends with, you know what I mean? And it would scare away the type of person that you wouldn't want around, you know. I mean, not to say it's like this criminal element, but in easier terms, like birds of a feather flock together, you know? Mm-hmm. And so in a way it's weeding out those who you're kind of like, why are you involved to begin with? You know, this is a phase for you.
Yeah, no, that's what's up for sure. I mean, yeah, I don't think we should probably get so hung up on people like falling off. It's more like, fucking see you later, fucking alligator, you fucking clown, fucking, you know. I hope you had a fun college life in the punk scene, you know. Like, yeah, I think, you know, fucking fuck yeah, let these motherfuckers fall, you know. We know who they are, and we've seen them all, you know. Yeah. And watch, you know, they'll be coming back to us, you know, fucking soon enough. And you know, we could just laugh all the way to hell.
Yeah. We got to get somebody. We got to get like Mark Devlin. You guys know that guy, the music.
Yeah.
I'm trying to get that guy on the show really bad. We got to get like Mark Devlin to go down the Keith Morris.
Yeah, man.
Paper trail, dude. Find out.
For sure. I mean, if anything, like to talk about the reset, they definitely shut down like music, entertainment, you know, anywhere you go and gather for entertainment, you know, except protests.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, they're trying to take this from us, you know, and our only answer is to, you know, we have to counterattack. We have to go back. We have to start booking our own shows. We have to be a little more secretive, you know, fucking can't let the squares know what we're doing, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, that's our reset, I think, man.
Yeah. I mean, what's cooler, going to get a vaccine at the Fillmore or going to the secret show under the fucking bridge in West Oakland where you might get stabbed and you can drink 40s like the fucking 90s, man, you know? Like,
take the booster aspect out of there, and I'm already saying the bridge is the real show.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I mean, like without question, you add in the booster aspect and it's like, yeah, no, that's not even a real thing.
The coolest, like I grew up at Gilman Street and I either drank at the abandoned house behind it, which is it condos now? I walked up the street towards the donut shop, hung a left, went down a couple blocks and drank at the fucking creek by the tile shop. You know, like
totally.
Now, like I, you know, I'd rarely go out to shows that later while I was still living in the Bay, but everybody, it was so boring when there was like a big show at Gilman, you'd have to like buy a ticket that now it wasn't $5 at the door anymore. And everybody would just go hang out at fucking Pyramid Brewery and totally. drink and eat French fries and wait for the headliner to come on and then go back, you know?
Yeah. I think I went to about 20 of those shows.
Yeah. So, but well, it's good to hear that you guys are still breathing life into it. Is there anything that you guys feel comfortable plugging?
Casey and I play in a band called Earth Dogs.
And yeah, where's my theme song?
Yeah, where the fuck? We wrote it, actually, dude. We jammed it out, didn't we?
Yeah, I think so. That was like a year ago. We'll do a new one for the Into the Apocalypse for sure.
Oh, hell yeah.
So we got a 7-inch coming out on 625 Records here. We got the test presses, so any month now.
Well, when those come out, let us know and we'll shout them out. We'll put links to where you're selling them online. I'd like to get a couple.
Yeah, I'll send some up to you guys for sure.
Hell yeah.
What else? If you haven't already, fucking check out Golden Gate Star Fort Command on YouTube and Instagram, right?
Yeah, we're gramming.
Yeah,
hell yeah.
Yeah, that Instagram is awesome.
Hell yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're digging it. You guys are blowing the lid off the secret history of the Bay Area. It's fantastic.
We're trying. It's fun, you know? Just barge around and look at cool shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been awesome. It's been a cool experience for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I like it. I like seeing that that pyramid up at Joaquin Miller up there.
Yeah, hell yeah. I got a bunch of video up there I'm going to put together for video one of these days.
Yeah, I finger blasted some girl from the internet up there once.
No shit?
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
That's tight, dude.
Hell yeah. Hopefully Joaquin Miller was smiling, looking down upon you.
Yeah.
Did it my wife, drop out?
I can say that because my wife doesn't listen to the podcast.
There you go.
It was a little wife.
Test. Find out if she is.
I met my wife on the internet, but it wasn't her.
So. Oh! Hard. That's a hard truth. Right
it was
there.
Pre.
Dropping hard truths on Deborah hey, Gets Red Pilled.
Yeah.
That's how it goes down.
Yeah.
Did you, like harvest any energy off the pyramid after the fact?
No, like I felt my finger didn't cramp up quite as soon.
I think he shot his load.
You Tesla heard it here
technology
first.
Man,
it's a cure for arthritis right there.
Yeah. but thanks for coming on, guys. You guys got an open invitation whenever you figure something out.
Cheers.
That we need to know about. We're glad that we're able to come on and do this show. But
thanks.
Yeah,
it's awesome. I'd like to talk old world fairs, all that kind of shit anytime you guys are up for it.
Dude, when can
I don't get sick of that.
Let's do it.
When can you put a Howdy McCloskey fucking five-way together, dude?
I'll try. That guy's he was hard to get, but I'll try again.
That interview y'all did was fucking bitching.
Thank you so much.
He's a legend.
I'm really proud of that show. His last interview on Crow was really good. Did you guys catch that one?
No, I still haven't listened to it yet.
Dude, listen to it. He gets back into, what does he talk about again? I can't remember.
Well, right away he starts talking about H.H. Holmes in Chicago.
Yeah.
And any, I mean, I haven't looked on the internet at this, but he said that like Hulu, I think he said, is making a series.
Yeah,
based on The Devil in the White City.
Yeah, who's in it?
Keanu Reeves.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And I guess Daniel Burnham is going to be a character in there. He's the guy who put on the Chicago's Fair that year.
Yeah.
And he's a fucking controller.
Yeah. they're not sure if Keno's going to play him or Holmes, or, you know, like he was basically had just read some, you know, I don't know, E-Online kind of articles about it or whatever. But yeah, he really went on about that. And he talked about Dubai a bunch with the 2020 World's Fair that's going on right now in 2022.
That's so crazy. And the Olympics, the 2020 Olympics that were in 2021, right?
Is that not just like a precursor for a reset right there that we're having World Fairs?
100%.
Jesus fucking Christ.
I looked into that World Fair a while back, and it took them like 12 years or some shit to from planning to construction, you know, like, or to completion.
Yeah.
And so like compared to the 1 year or 6 months of the expos of like 1905.
There's probably shit for architecture there. And it took them 12 years. Whereas we're supposed to look at Chicago and believe that those structures, you know,
You know, this is with computers, you know, they're having computers come up with the drawings and everything.
Yeah, and slave labor probably too, you know. So
totally.
Yeah, so, even he talked about on there. There's UCLA put together a computer animated tour of the Chicago World's Fair, the Columbia Exposition. It goes down all the streets and stuff. I took a look at, but that took, I think he said it was like 17 years to get that out. to make 17 years to make the computer version of what they built as quickly as they say.
I mean, and we're talking punk and shit. Is that just not like picture perfect for devolution? You know what I mean? Like, we're just devolving as time goes on. Get the fuck out of here. Yeah, it's insane.
But has everybody tricked that we're evolving?
Yeah. Well, I'll get you guys out of here before we keep talking about this for another 3 hours. So
yeah.
Wait, I thought we started another podcast.
Thank you guys so much. Thank you guys so much for coming on. I'll get this out tonight. So I'll tag you all. Send me some links if you want. Send me some links right away if you want me to throw them in the show notes. Okay.
Okay. Hell yeah.
All right, guys.
Awesome, dudes.
Thanks
for listening, guys. Love you all.
Peace. Cheers.
Bye.